Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Congratulations on hosting a festival which I think everyone was very satisfied, more than satisfied, very happy with. It's a good achievement, especially doing it the first time. Well done. Hare Krishna. So, questions. Where do we draw the line between strictness and compassion? Sometimes we see that new people come and they can follow the program, but as time goes on, the surrender of that newcomer is not increasing. Sometimes it seems they just like the comfort of the facility. Do we allow him to go on, or do we push him to surrender, risking his Krishna consciousness? If they leave, how much do I reflect upon myself and the training that I am giving? Well, it makes me think of the concept of mercy. Can you give too much mercy? Maybe. How can mercy be too much? Mercy means activity directed to someone to help to benefit them, particularly to a subordinate. Sometimes we hear the idea that, oh, you take initiation, you get so much mercy. I'll carry you through by my... We've heard this. I don't know if it's written anywhere, but just hold on to Srila Prabhupada's dhoti and I'll carry you back to Godhead. Something like the Jesus idea. I believe in Jesus. And that's all. And if you think you have to do anything, that's wrong. There's a whole large strand of Protestant Christianity. The path of faith versus the path of works. If you think you have to do something, that means you don't have enough faith in Jesus. So it's wrong to think you can do anything to save yourself when Jesus is the only one who saves us. So yeah, we're completely dependent on the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, but the mercy comes primarily in the form of instructions, which we're supposed to follow. And by doing so, we develop our personal attachment to Krishna. It's a personal activity. We have to be, it's a personal endeavor. We have to be ready to serve Krishna 24 hours a day without any reservation. So that is a question of attitude, and that is a question of our individual use of independence, which we can use or misuse. And you can get a lot of mercy and still you can misuse your independence and it won't make any difference to you. A prime example is the persons who had the most association with Srila Prabhupada. Who had most association with Srila Prabhupada? Ketananda, maybe. Who else? Who might you think? His family, exactly, yeah. They had years and years of personal, intimate association. They didn't take advantage at all. They weren't very happy with his Krishna consciousness. Mercy means giving instruction and giving facility, encouraging, but ultimately it's up to the individual to take advantage of that or not. And if you try to make too much mollycoddling, do you know this word, mollycoddling? Then the person will never become strong. That's why in the Western culture, the mothers who care for their children, they don't smother them with love to the extent that, for instance, Bengali mothers do to their sons. But they'll want to see them struggle and work hard and be able to stand on their own two feet, because they're not always going to be holding on to their mother's apron. They're going to have to go out in a tough world and look after themselves to a large extent. So they have to be ready for that. So a mother who wants the best benefit of her child will not simply give mercy in the form of overprotectiveness. That's absolutely required for a young baby. But as the child grows physically and mentally, that's the saying, they have to learn to stand on your own two feet. That's the transition between absolute infancy and becoming a young child. So the idea that you just give mercy and you get initiation, and then that's some special mercy. If you take initiation from this guru, you get some special mercy. But I often think that's saying that is actually giving this idea that you get some special mercy just by taking initiation from a certain guru. It's actually inhibiting the growth of the disciple. It's actually a disservice to the disciple to say that, if it makes them think that I don't have to make full endeavor, because anyway, my guru is so merciful and is going to deliver me anyway. So it's actually a disservice, and then you get all these devotees coming to you all the time asking for blessings, as if you give the blessings and I'll go on with my life, and you just give, I want blessings to go to Goloka Vrindavan, but you have to be prepared for that. Srila Prabhupada writes famously in the Tadvidhi Pranipatena verse purport, that one has to pass the test of the spiritual master. It's not just shoveling buckets of mercy or smothering with real or imagined mercy, but the actual mercy is giving knowledge, giving service, allowing to take the tests or subjecting to tests, putting through the fire of ordeal. That is mercy. Mercy upon, you don't give a little child now you go and fight in the army. You don't give it to a 5-year-old child. They may play like that, but you protect and you allow to play. You give food and this and that, but he may. And that's why there's training in the army, especially in the special services. Here they have the green berets. In India they have the black cats, and special armed services in England. They'll do things like going for 2 days without food in the cold weather, carrying packs, huge packs on their back. They'll do things like that just to prepare themselves, because that's the kind of situation they're being trained to face in course of active service. If you may say, well, let's be merciful to the army cadets. We won't give them hard training. We'll just be merciful to them. They can sit and put their feet up and watch TV, and we'll feed them with hamburgers and sausages, and let's be merciful to them. And then when it comes time to fight, they become cannon fodder. They can't do their job properly. Who was that? Was it Dhanavir Maharaj or someone saying that? I can't remember exactly. He was saying how he was an army cadet, and he was just he'd just gone in the army because he wanted a job or something like that, and he thought, well, it was past time and at least get some money. And then, so he was under the training. He didn't like the guy who was training him. The guy was always shouting orders at him, and he wasn't prepared for that. You go in the army, you got to be prepared for that. But he didn't like it, and he'd always make some comment or something and get sent to, and get chastised. And then he got a notice after a few months, this got a notice that in a short time he's being drafted out to Iraq, to the fighting field. And all of a sudden he thought, oh my, I never thought, couldn't imagine that would happen to him. And all of a sudden he realized that the sergeant who had been training him was training him for his own good, so he could at least survive, if not fulfill the mission of the U.S. military, whatever it's doing in Iraq. And all of a sudden his attitude changed, and he realized that this trainer is actually my friend, even though he's so tough and seems to be so nasty with me. But the people I'm going to be facing are going to be really nasty, and it's not training, they're out to kill me. So then he became he understood the situation and became more serious. So newcomers, their surrender is not increasing. You can tweak up gradually, ratchet it up. That's when you go little by little, ratchet it up. Little by little you increase the intensity, if they don't want to surrender, then they shouldn't be living in a temple. Can increase the tenants, send them out, if they can't distribute books, at least for Harinam Sankirtan. Try to see if there's something they can fit into that they like. There are devotees who are devotees, but they just don't fit into temple life, and Mahavishnu Swami picks them up and Parashuram in England picks them up and gets them busy, and they're going around, and they're a bunch of eccentric fellows and fellowinis or whatever you call them, guys and gals, and they're happy, they're having fun traveling all over the world and doing something to spread the Sankirtan movement. So it may be something that they can fit into. Maybe they're not in the mold of just full surrender, but if they can fit in and find something they want to do. Otherwise, we should have our Varnashram communities. That's for devotees who are not prepared for the... Well, it is for devotees who are prepared for the rigid life of surrender, because you have to have some devotees to lead the community. It's not a holiday home. But for those devotees who like to do something for Krishna, but whose level of practicing Krishna consciousness, they just, for whatever reason, they're not coming up. So everyone has to work hard in the Varsha Ashram. It's not it's not a holiday home, but it's not that everyone has to follow the strict sadhana. Minimally, they should be prepared to work and follow some principle. That's a big discussion. In future, on our Varnashram communities, will meat eating be allowed for Shudras? Under certain conditions. It's allowed in Vedic culture under certain conditions. Varnashram means Vedic culture. So that's a big discussion. Right now we're not thinking of it, but there should be some facility. They had that idea at New Vrindavan, as far as I know, that there'd be devotees who just, they like to come to Kirtan and they do service. They'll do service all day, and they live in their own village, their own area, and what they do there when they're not working, you know, whether it's dope or booze or whatever. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no. Let them do whatever they like, but let them come and join the kirtan and do some service. And there were quite a few who worked hard and did that kind of thing, as I understand, so I'm told. But for temple life, we require devotees who are prepared to do the needful. And we bring devotees in, and we see if they're prepared, let them do. There may come a point in their life where they think, okay, that's had enough of that. So they could go outside and live life on their own terms and conditions, or imagine that they're living life on their own terms and conditions, because you have to do something to get some money to support yourself. I often suggest to devotees who are going to, they're not going to be lifelong brahmacharis, but come and spend 1 year or at least 6 months in the brahmachari ashram, fully give yourself to it. Then later, you can go on to a life of Krishna consciousness, but not this. This is really the brahmachari ashram is really meant for just like that. The black cats, the green berets. It's the all or nothing program. So don't expect that everyone's going to be fully ready for that. We'll give everyone the chance. And see where different devotees are at, and then can help to guide them on in their journey. The brahmachari ashram is all or nothing, but it's not that there's only the brahmachari ashram. Krishna consciousness doesn't mean all or nothing. There are levels and stages. So if devotees, if newcomers are not ready for that, and definitely you have to, it's actually no one, who's ready? Hardly anyone. But you have to push them and pull them and see if they can get into that mold. And if they're not, then we have to discuss and help direct them to where they, to a position where they can go on practicing. And again, it may come after a few years even. Someone may be doing that for a few years and then feel that now I need to change my level of commitment. Second question, directed to myself. You have studied the Sri Vaishnava tradition to a great extent. I haven't. I wouldn't say to a great extent, not at all. Recently, I learned about Vedanta Deshika and was very inspired to see their dedication to their acharya. That's something which is very prominent in the Ramanuja tradition. Actually, in all Indian traditions, even secular, devotion to guru is a central point. Even in the Mayavad traditions, all of them. This what is that? The Guru Stotra. What is that? That's well, Shankaracharya's Guru Vashtaka is there. That's there, and there's another one which I Guru Gita or something like this. They're all written by Mayavadis also. So it's very prominent in the Sri Vaishnava tradition. And in general, the spirit of appreciation of devotees, which is one of the factors that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much appreciated in that sampradaya. Does this mood of complete surrender to acharya come from a philosophical basis or more from culture? Well, it's both. Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam, its philosophical basis. Yasya Prasadat Bhagavat Prasado, Yasya Prasada Nagati Katopi. By the mercy of the Guru, one can attain the mercy of Krishna without, or if one doesn't, somehow displeases or does not get the mercy of the Guru, then whatever else you do, then you're not going to make it. So philosophically, and that's developed with culture. All culture is based on philosophy. Even the Sweet Auburn, what is it? Sweet Auburn Festival. It's not exactly a philosophy, but it's an unspoken attitude to life or worldview. I've written on this extensively, and I'm making notes on Bhagavad Gita on that. Shraddha mayo yang purusha yo yaj shraddha sa eva saha. Everyone has some kind of faith, and we are defined, a person is defined by their faith. So I've written extensively on this, that it's like a worldview. Here we can understand Shraddha as worldview, one's outlook on or how one understands the world, and that shapes one's whole personality. Is this mood of complete surrender to Acharya centered around one personality? Yeah, the person, well, actually two. It's Lakshmi and Narayana. They are the center. And especially in the Tengalai branch, which is not Vedanta Deshika, it's very much centered on Sri more than Narayana. Guru, yes, very much attention on Guru, but with the clear understanding that Guru is a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have in the Madhva Sampradaya also a similar thing. Hari Sarvotama Vayu Jivotama. Hari is above all, and Vayu is or the supreme jiva, or above all the others. Can this be established very prominently in the devotees? It seems to be a quandary in ISKCON society at the present time. Definitely, that was that mood of devotion to Srila Prabhupada is very strong. Devotees, their natural feelings of gratitude to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada also, as Ekehard Lorenz, one scholar pointed out, he was Ekanath Das, a disciple of Harikesh Maharaj, who decided at some point that he didn't want to be a devotee anymore, and he wrote some scholarly articles in which he pointed out. You'll find this book in there's an anthology called The Post Charismatic Fate of the Hare Krishna Movement. Maybe that's the subtitle. I can't remember. Anyway, no, that's a completely different book. That's more sensationalistic. This book is a scholar. Is that the title? Do you know Tapavit Prabhu? The Post-Charismatic... What's the title? That sounds like a subtitle. The Post-Charismatic Fate of the... You're not aware of that. It came out maybe 15 years ago. It was compiled by Edwin Bryant and Maria Ekstrand. No, Hare Krishna Transformed is Stilson Judah. Not Stilson Judah, it's Burke Rochford. Just called... Oh, the Hare Krishna Movement. That was an overly generic title. And then the Post-Charismatic Fate of a Religious Transplant. Okay. So in that, Ekehard Lorenz pointed out that Srila Prabhupada, in his commentaries, emphasized much more than had previous acharyas the role of the guru. Although we know that... And he seemed to imply that Srila Prabhupada was pumping himself up like that, seemed to imply that. He also noted that Srila Prabhupada, in his commentaries, and in his speaking in general, had emphasized the dangers of sex life and the inferiority of women more than others had done. And maybe there was some other point also, which I don't remember. So he was writing about that in a somewhat skeptical way. But we know that Srila Prabhupada himself said that what had been a pivotal point in his own spiritual development had been his reading of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment of the Ekeha Kurunandana, that the Vyavasayatmaka Buddhi Ekeha Kurunandana, that the one-pointed fixity is the a symptom of someone who's advancing in spiritual life. And then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment in that connection goes something like that, that my spiritual master's orders are my only worshipable entity, both in the stage of sadhana and in the stage of sadhya, both in the stage of practice and and the stage of perfection. I have nothing else to do but to follow the orders of my spiritual master. And whether I'm delivered from the material world or not, I don't care. So really emphasizing this very much. And of course, Narottam Das Thakur also, Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitete Korea Aika Ana Koriho Mane Asha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jogata Bichare Kichu Nahi Pai Tomara Koruna Sha. It's not that Srila Prabhupada invented this. It's completely within our tradition, and as I say, within every Indian tradition, even not only the Vedic. Vedic tradition includes music, dance, which is secular, but even in the tantric tradition and the Jain tradition, and the role of guru is always essential. So maybe Srila Prabhupada in his writings did emphasize it. I don't know if more than others. Of course, Srila Prabhupada's writings were so voluminous that it might seem like more times, because overall Srila Prabhupada spoke more times on pretty much everything, because he spoke, at least we have recordings of what Srila Prabhupada stated. As far as the dangers of sex, that was obviously very much needed for the preaching field that Srila Prabhupada was operating in. And he didn't, if you see his talks in India, he didn't talk about that nearly as much as he did in the West, seeing that the tendency to fall down into illicit sex is so much prevalent and prominent in Western society. And Srila Prabhupada had that experience also so many times of disciples doing well, doing nicely, taking responsibility, all of a sudden, bloop, they've blooped. So Srila Prabhupada emphasized that very much. The inferior social role of women, Srila Prabhupada also, but it's there in Shastra also. Emphasized it. Yeah, he wanted to establish, well, much more than that, he emphasized the need to establish varnashram with proper brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras. And there's brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas. If we see in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam the description of varnashram society, there's a description of the role of brahmanas, of kshatriyas, of vaishyas, shudras, not much is written, and of women. So there, you can say, four plus one group. So he emphasized all of these things. Maybe A.K. Hard-Lorenz didn't notice that, but for to have a structured society, actually every society is structured, but to structure it scientifically, as Srila Prabhupada said, these these divisions have to be understood. So where does that go? Where do I get to in this? Can this be established very prominently in the devotees? Oh yeah, so Ekahat Lorenz was pointing out that Prabhupada had emphasized this so much, the role of the guru. And after Srila Prabhupada's departure from our mortal vision, those who took the roles, the role of guru in succession to Srila Prabhupada, the first 11 presumed that being a guru means to be exactly like Srila Prabhupada. And of course Srila Prabhupada had said, do as I am doing. And that they were automatically, by being a guru, on the same level as Srila Prabhupada. That was a terrible mistake, because it's not simple. It's just like by giving a sannyas rod to someone, you don't make them a sannyasi. By giving a thread to someone, they don't automatically transform and become a brahmana. So it was encouraged, the full surrender to and devotion for the 11 gurus, but then later that was seen that it wasn't working. There was severe problems. Not with the... There's not a problem with being devoted to the guru, but the guru has to hold their act together, keep their act together, and be a guru. And now the pendulum has gone the other way, to the extent that it's almost, in some quarters, it's almost discouraged that there should be, that you should follow a guru. You have a guru, okay, all right. You can have a photo with your guru. But actually following, worshipping, then that's somewhat discouraged. And probably the pendulum will keep on swinging back and forward in course of time. Although in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, actually I'm speaking on this guru issues thing, and it comes in this series. I can say what the solution to our guru problems are. I want to go through the whole thing and then come to this at the end. Well, the solution is Varnashram Dharma. Oh, what's that going to do with gurus? And it's spiritual, right? But it means training from the beginning of life. That's why we're talking about the Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya here. They have a whole culture, and boys are trained from the beginning of life, and they go on in their life in that culture so that they are devotees, and they've cultivated it throughout there. Of course, in the Madhva Sampradaya, they have child sannyas, bal sannyas, the young boys, but in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they're raised. And you'll see all these jiyas now, with the exception of that Chinna Jiya Swami, but most of them, they're former bank managers and Life Insurance Corporation of India officers, but they've been Sri Vaishnavas all their life, and now they're sannyasis, head of the institution. But there, the Brahmana boys should be trained from a young age in culture and in Shastra, so that they are fit to be gurus. They should know Shastra, they should know the culture, and it becomes a very natural thing for them. When they're raised, they see their father is giving initiation, or their father is serving his guru, and it just become, it's not a big mental thing, it's just a very natural thing for them to do that. Maybe as time goes on, we can better understand what a great thing Srila Prabhupada did in bringing Krishna consciousness to the West, and what a great ambition he had to establish Varnashram Dharma and to make brahmanas in the Western world. We still have a long, long way to go. So can this be established very prominently in the devotees? Yeah, it should be. But it shouldn't be by hype. It should be based on substance. Okay, Hare Krishna. Anything else? This was supposed to be a shorty session. No doubt, Vatsal Prabhu, who you were right in the middle, you were in America. America really suffered from the Zonal Acharya era. You were in LA at the time, was it? Well, it was. It really came to a head, the whole thing, in
87.
Yeah,
87 with a big meeting in New Vrindavan.
But 86, it was. Well, he didn't say the name. Three of the big gurus in 86, bam, bam, bam. In about 2 months, they all...
Yeah, but 87 was the big meeting in New Vrindavan. 87
was the big guru reform thing in New Vrindavan. Yeah.
Yeah, I was
there. You were there in L.A. and Rameshwar was practically begging, leave me alone, you know, don't give me this big seat. He was... And... But the others forced him to, you know, you have to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's how we heard it. But, yeah.
Anyway, my question was about the shiksha and diksha.
Mm.
Those were, you know, some are saying that we're a shiksha succession rather than a diksha succession, and too much emphasis is put on the diksha, and that this will... If we put more emphasis on shiksha, this will be better for our movement.
Yeah, that's true. The thing is that the last two diksha gurus, Bhaktisthan Sasar Thakur and our own Srila Prabhupada, they were diksha gurus for their whole institution in both cases. And their shiksha was on such a high level that clearly everyone was much less than them. When we say that there's a shiksha sampradaya, well, we say that because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if we see his diksha guru, he wasn't prominent in the way the Bhaktivinoda Thakur was himself. If we see, the line is traced from the six Goswamis to Narottam Das. So Lokanath Goswami, who's the Diksha Guru of Narottam Das, isn't mentioned. But of course his Shiksha Guru was Jiva Goswami. And then we have, in the written line that we have at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita as it is, and it's accepted in all the Gauriya Mat branches, then the next in line is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who came two generations after Narottam. So he was born after Narottam left. And there were devotees in between, of course, who were, from all accounts, great pure devotees, but they weren't prominent in the way that Narottam was. And Narottam's teachings in the form of his songs have been the a major support for devotees in Bengal for generations. I was traveling in Bangladesh in the 1980s, and you just go around, people, they know, and they're singing songs of Narottam Das. He's been so influential. So Vishwanath, yeah, he was his another towering figure. His contributions, his writings, his organization, so many things. So when we say that the prominent devotees in our line, we take, yeah, so Narottam Das, and then next is given Baladev Vidyabhushan, who wasn't initiated by, but was under the guidance of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Then Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, he came after Baladev Vidyabhushan left this world. So what we're looking at here is prominent devotees who are not necessarily in the same diksha line, but they take... well, in the case of great devotees like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he did take shiksha from his diksha guru, and exactly what happened later on is not clear. It seems there was some rejection, maybe mutual. But he himself was, it's as if he was taking shiksha, or taking the, he was reading and taking the essence of the scriptures and making his writings. So in that way he took shiksha from the previous acharyas. And of course he took inspiration from Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. In the case of Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, his name is given after Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but of course he didn't take diksha from him, and he was a great devotee even before he'd met Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So when we say that the line is by shiksha, we're talking about devotees whose diksha gurus may not be very prominent in the matter of their shiksha. So therefore shiksha is more important than diksha. How does that translate into the context of ISKCON today? Well, we have so many devotees giving initiation, but we have many more who are guiding and inspiring, and that's healthy. I was speaking to some devotees from LA. They were there with Bhrigupati Prabhu, and they all look up to, they're all initiated by different gurus, but for all intents and purposes, the main figure they look up to is Bhrigupati Prabhu, and they also mention Shravas Prabhu, because they're living with them day after day, year after year, taking guidance and training from them. I wish that more of my god brothers had initiated, taken up that role, but it's not something that everyone's prepared to do. Maybe in the next generation there'll be many, or maybe it's going to happen very soon, because there's a new GBC resolution that that many devotees can start initiating in the presence of their gurus. So the whole guru scene's likely to change. We don't know. It's experimental. It's kind of experiment like setting off an atomic bomb. You're not exactly sure what's going to happen, but let's check it out anyway. You know that when they did the first atomic explosion in New Mexico, some of the scientists who were researching thought that maybe the whole atmosphere of the Earth will become ignited and the whole Earth will burn up. But they said, anyway, let's give it a try and see. At least it'll be an exciting end. Female Diksha Gurus, one is not enough to show the... Because the thing that's really going to make the difference in the Western world is having female Diksha Gurus. And as soon as you have female Diksha Gurus, millions of people are going to come bursting down the doors saying, I want to join the movement. Now we know we are not misogynistic. This is the solution. But you know what? People aren't so stupid. One is not enough. You have to have at least as many women as men, and probably more, because generations, like men have been messing up the world for so long, now everything should be in the hands of the women, so you have to have more women. And so, yeah, you can expect we're going to have a lot of Guru Devis and giving them Guru Devi Dakshina, lipstick, what color do you like best, and all this kind of thing. So maybe better not to ask too many questions about guru, because we'll have to invent a new philosophy to fit all this stuff. Sorry for my sarcasm. What do you do? And we tried to discuss and this and that, but it's a fait accompli. Just the first step. More is coming. Hare Krishna. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Sahodra Swami passed away in Mayapur a few years ago, and some of his closer friends, including myself, discussed that. He was happy to go because he was seeing the way things were going, and he just didn't want to stay. He suddenly passed away. Oh, you have a question? Sahodra Swami, he was one of those rare devotees who was not very happy with the whole situation in the movement. There are a few troublemakers here and there. Only a handful. More or less everyone's absolutely happy. He suddenly passed away, and it was quietly said among some that it was almost as he'd be happy to go because he was so unhappy with the whole situation and seeing it going from bad to worse. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, just for clarification, because I'm receiving a lot of questions in this regard. Personally, for yourself, can you please explain what it means when someone takes shelter of you? When can they chant your pranam mantra?
What does it mean when someone takes shelter of me? And
when can they chant your pranam mantras?
When can they chant my pranam mantra?
And because in India they have a standard. Here they have some other, you know. So I would like to, just for clarification, hear it from yourself.
Take shelter. It's like I said in the class on the initiation day. What is exactly happening? I don't really know, because it's Krishna's mercy and it's a much bigger thing than I can understand. But somehow I'm in this role, and Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to initiate, and the mercy flows through. I'm just a piece of copper in a wire. But we see that devotees, they if you tell them to do what Prabhupada told us to do, and they do it, then the mercy flows through. So take shelter means I'm taking shelter of Prabhupada. What does that mean? Following his instructions. Prabhupada is taking shelter of his guru by following his instructions. And if we do that, the mercy of Krishna flows through. How does it happen? That's Krishna's magic. I don't know how it's working. It's inconceivable. We can talk about it philosophically, but it's not something Krishna has to give. That out of his kindness he gives it. And chanting the pranam mantra, well, yeah, they should follow. Right? They should be following up to the level of preparing for initiation. Should be following four regular principles, chanting 16 rounds, studying the books, all these things. And be seen to do that, and be recommended for that.
Because the guru accepts the the sins and offenses. I mean, the sins are transferred. He doesn't accept it. It's kind of like the guru is responsible for the disciple, and therefore if the disciple commits sinful activities, it affects the guru. And so my question is, once they start chanting your pranam mantra, is that the case, or is it after diksha?
No, initiation is
okay.
The formality.
Okay.
Diksha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan. That's generally considered. Actually, the real initiation is one with the sankalpa, with the decision to surrender in Krishna consciousness at this place, and the acceptance. So practically it's there, but it's formalized in the ceremony. And if it's not practically, it's not that at the moment you sit down, you decide, now I'm going to surrender, but that should be there already. And that's formalized. Hare Krishna. All right, one more, then we'll go.
Guru Maharaj, this is in regards to the point you made about Varnashram, where Shudras also, meat-eating Shudras, you know, would they be allowed, because they're allowed in Vedic culture? You're making this point. So, in this regard, Guru Maharaj, in the Varnashram Dharma that Srila Prabhupada wants us to set up, you know, would we also have like demigods, or would we have it like the way Shiva?
These questions are in our minds. Those of us who have put in many, many hours of discussing the future of our projects, but it's we don't really have to consider it too much right now. But quite likely it will be there. Will there be demigod worship in if we have Varnashram Society in future? I would think so. Maybe, I don't know, we'll have to see. We're not at that stage yet, and we're not going to introduce it now. But it might be something just like in Madhva line, they have demigod worship, but at the same time, very, very strong understanding of Vishnu as supreme. So it may be, we'll have to see. If there's going to be meat eating, then there has to be demigod, or less than demigod, quarter god, something. Worship, because they have to offer. Actually, they offer to Kali, don't they? And she doesn't accept it. The
witches,
the ghosts all around her, they accept it.
I had once asked a Sri Vaishnav Sannyasi about this. Well, he claimed that Krishna Devaraya was a Sri Vaishnava, which I don't know. I thought he was a Madhva. But anyways, he's a Vaishnava, and then I asked him, well, Krishna Devaraya in his kingdom had demigod temples, and he, in fact, even built them.
He was almost certainly a meat eater, being Kshatriya, caste of meat eaters.
So I asked him, how do you
consider... What about Prataparudra Maharaj? I would think at least his forefathers were. The Maharaj of Tripura, he was a great sponsor of the Gauriya Math. And one time after he took prasad there, he said, if I can get prasad like this every day, I'd stop meat eating. And that's considered almost among Kshatriya caste in India up to the present time, it's considered almost like their dharma that they have to eat meat. Although I have met people of Kshatriya background who don't eat meat also. And there are brahmanas who, for generations, they eat meat. Many people of brahmana caste, not only in Bengal and Orissa, where they're fish eaters, but many brahmanas, for generations, they're meat eaters. This Vajpayee, Prime Minister of India, he was a meat eater, traditionally in their family, they were meat eaters. You go to this Sanskrit, whatever it is, in Sanskrit Bharati or whatever it is, something in Puri. It's run by, they're promoting spoken Sanskrit. They have branches all over. Is it Sanskrit or Bharati? That's right, yeah. And it's run by Brahmanas, and they're all meat eaters. So it's not forbidden. You see in the Bhagavatam, Agastya was sat down to eat a meal. Supposed to be a ram, but actually it was Devapi, was it? So these things have to be considered. But Ashvamedham Gavalambhyam, certain things are forbidden in Kali Yuga. But yeah, they would eat Yajna Shishta. They'd eat the remnants of Yajna, the food left over in Yajna, which they'd have to, the Kshatriyas would have to go and hunt in the forest to get that. And they'd see which, and after, you'd see, it's even written in Mahabharata, and after killing, they'd see which animals are fit for sacrificing, they'd bring them back. Not all are fit for sacrificing. So it's a very elaborate culture, actually. And Gauriya Vaishnavism, to a large extent, rebels against that. What is that? Tadera Charana Shavi Bhakti Shane Vash. What's the Echoi gosai ja moi taradas tanshaba parareya mora pancha grass. So he says that the lotus feet dust of the six Goswamis, they're my five morsels. So what I understand from that, it's indicative of saying that by taking shelter of the Vaishnavas, all the Varnashram rules you don't have to follow. That's what I take it. And we have this Madhavendra Puri that... goodbye to my morning baths, goodbye to my offerings to the forefathers and all this kind of thing. So, Gaudiya Vaishnavism accepted that spirit, but then it got... But this is a huge discussion. Varnashram is like a safety, minimally a safety net. And if you go tightrope walking without a safety net and you're not properly balanced, then you're going to die. So you want to follow Gaudiya Vaishnavism and throw out all Varnashram rules, but you're not fully surrendered, then you fall down into illicit sex and so many other bad things, which was what was going on. So by the time Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he started emphasizing, we've got to have Varnashram. Actually, it began at the time of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. I just read, one devotee had written a PhD thesis on this, that, this is a huge discussion. So Vishwanath, in his early writings, had rejected Varnashram, not needed for Vaishnavas. In the meantime, we have Jai Singh II in Jaipur saying that, well, we have to run society, we need Varnashram, and he wants to sponsor Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And others are also, the Ramanandis had traditionally been the main religious group in his family line. He wanted to be just... generalizations here. So he wanted, but how are we going to have Gaudiya Vaishnavism if you're every line you're rejecting Varnashram? So this question came up, and then Baladev Vidyabhushan, he was not the first, the second. There was another court pundit who was a Gaudiya Vaishnava of Maharaj Jai Singh II who wrote Karma Vivritti and some other books showing how Gaudiya Vaishnavism is compatible with Varnashram. And that was also shown in in Baladev's Gita commentary. And then Vishwanath himself, in his later years, also showed how the two can go together. Because if you only have a small group of Babaji's, then you don't have to have Varnashram. But if you're going to have it spread widely in society, people have to live according to some rules and some system. And if they don't have Varnashram, they're going to have the United States of America or something like that. You got to have some system, right? Democracy, fascism, socialism, communism. You got to have some system. So Krishna's social system is Varnashram. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur stressed that very much. And our own Srila Prabhupada stressed that very much. Hare Krishna. Let's finish now. Hare Krishna. So we need, not everyone's going to be able to be full-on, full-time, lifelong, fully intense devotee. And if we try to push everyone into that mold, we may do them a disservice also. Just like we were saying, if you're too loose with people and say, oh, just take mercy, then they won't get the strength to come up and make their own decision to and their own effort in Krishna consciousness. But then on the other hand, sometimes you push so hard that devotees, it's a pushing movement, but don't push so hard that you push people away. So it's, where is the line? It's hard to say. Some people will go away, whatever you do. So pushing should be there, but a little sensitivity to push them harder than they can go, but just a little bit. So they can, then their capacity increases, right? Srila Prabhupada gave that example. You have a boy, say a youth, and he picks up the calf when the calf is born. And he keeps on picking up every day and walking around, and the calf gets bigger and bigger and bigger, so he can carry, theoretically. I don't know how you're going to carry a full-fledged cow around, but the idea is that you increase, as the calf is increasing, you increase your capacity by gradual practice. So where is the line? It's hard to say. Sometimes you may say something to someone and you don't know. They could flip this way or that. They could flip and say, yeah, that's it. That's what I needed to hear. Okay, now I'm going to surrender to Krishna. Or they could just flip right away. You don't know. But on the other hand, if you don't do that at all, someone may just go along at a mediocre pace, lifetime after lifetime, and never make the, unless you take that risk, they may just not get anywhere. Well, they get up to the heavenly planets. Then they come back again. The demigods are waiting to take birth in this movement. But why are they demigods? Because they're pious devotees with material desires. But then they come down, and how long are they? And again, they're going to be pious devotees with material desires. And again, go to the heavenly planets. Devotee was just telling me yesterday that his daughter, from India, moved to, he's been in America for many years. So his daughter was, and he lived next to a temple, and so he and the kids were going to the temple all their life. They're grown up in that atmosphere. So his daughter got initiated. He's initiated by me, and he and his wife initiated by me, and his daughter got initiated by some other guru in ISKCON. She got initiated when, I don't know, she was 15 or 16 or something. So now she's finished her university degree and she's working in New York. She's following the four regulated principles, they told me, but she's working in New York, and they said, well, we couldn't do anything about it. She wants to see the world and she's checking out material society. She's following and chanting, they say, but if you take by the standard of a surrendered devotee, anukulyena sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam, then you don't go to check out what's going on in New York in the material world and go and take a job there. But if you're pious and you have material desires, then it's the kind of thing you might do. I mean, New York's the next thing to heaven, right? At least some people seem to think like that. Well, that's what you thought too before you came to, you were in India and you went to New York. And lucky for you, you got burned out pretty quick. But piety can be an obstacle in one's advancement in devotional life. The fact that you don't fall down and you don't get beaten with the heavy lashes of Maya, so you can just float on the surface and enjoy at a certain level without, but of course it's very dangerous because you can be sucked down anytime and you could be physically a young girl, you know, 21 years old or something, you know, and it's a bad world. So it's very risky. But that piety can be an obstacle. One reason people are coming to us in the Western world, one major factor that people come and join the Hare Krishna in the Western world and dedicate themselves, is because they've been so badly lashed by the waves of material enjoyment that they really don't have much faith in the joys of this material world, and they're really serious about spiritual alternative. Whereas their piety protects them, but it also protects them from Krishna. So we get the well-known Indian saying, yes, do bhakti, but not too much. And there is, it's as if they've internalized that. And that's what the demigods are. They're doing bhakti, but not too much. The real goal, the real goal of life is enjoying ourselves in this world. And when things go wrong, well, Krishna's always there to help us out, right? Hare Krishna, Vancha Kalpataru Pyaschaki Pasintu Bhavachak. Patita Nam Pavane Pyo Vaishnave Pyo Namo Namaha. Dante Nitai Trinakam Patayoni Pantakrit Vajaka Krishna Meta Dhan Pravini Sadhava Sakala Eva Vyarat. Gurang.